Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Blood River Radio family, finally the first team gets in here. Oh, Bitter Ender, buddy, he's back in here. We've just been treading water till the Bitter Ender gets here. No, we had two really good first hours, I believe. Two really good hours. A good first hour, a good second hour. I enjoyed Kelly being in and telling about the evil Adolf Hitler having all these different races into the Waffen-SS. I thought that was interesting. And we had Phil Torney on, just in case you're tuning in. Well, he gave us a little after-action report up there in Virginia, in Roanoke, Virginia. You know, the hell they caught up there. But now we've got into the third hour. We have the Bitter Ender himself. Fresh in the field, he's still got mud and blood on his boots, but I see his sword, though, is not quite beat to hell like it usually is. It's pretty bad shape, but I think it would be good for one or two more Yankees before it's just unusable. But go ahead, Bitter Ender. What are we going to do tonight, brother?
No, it's always a hard introduction to live up to, Eddie, I tell you what. But thank you. We're going to try to. This is a program I've given not on Blood River Radio before, but I've talked to several groups about it. It's called Myths, Lies, Propaganda, and Organic Bull Fertilizer. And I think our listeners will know what that is. It's about all the lies that have been told about the South, and we'll cover several subjects, secession, slavery, the start of the war, who actually started the war, who pushed for the war to get started between 1861 and 65, and how that has been such a trend in our national government. It seems like when the Yankees or the central government, because there are a lot of good people up north that aren't Yankees, they just had the unfortunate curse put upon them of being born north of the Mason-Dixon line, and they're some of our strongest supporters and strongest listeners, but the government had taken over and had this idea of this imperial presidency, and that came as a result of this war and what happened. And it really amazes me, or frustrates me, I guess, to see these so-called conservatives on TV, like Sean Hannity and even Tucker Carlson and Bill O'Reilly and the late Rush Limbaugh when he was on the radio. They talk about how rotten the government is, and it's overreaching, and it's too big, and it's bureaucratic, and this and that and that. And then they turn right around and praise Lincoln.
Yes.
And like he was, you know, the second coming of Christ. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you don't know much about history. Where did all of this stuff start that you're complaining about? And that fellow Mark Levin on Fox, he's always ranting about the government, and then he's got a bust of Lincoln sitting right behind him. Buddy, you don't really know. So anyway, that's what we're going to try to do tonight is dispel some of these lies about the Southern Confederacy.
Hey, you got to say one thing. It's like having a bust of Lincoln and a so-called conservative radio guys. It's kind of like having a microwave inside of an outhouse.
I'm going to try that next time I head down the path to the loud house. I'll see if I can run an extension cord down there.
Yes, sir. Right. Yes, sir, brother. Sorry,
well,
I left you
in a way, you know, we've had Monica Schaefer on, and a brilliant woman, very insightful. And we even had a program one time where we compared what happened to the Germans and Germany before, during, and after World War II, and what happened to the South before, during, and after our war, attempted war for independence. And I have to admit, I'm really in a pretty bad mood this week. For the third time, I've read that book by M.S. King, The Bad War. And that should be required reading in every single high school history class in this country to find out how we were lied into World War One, how we were lied into World War Two, and the horrible treatment that was brought down upon the German civilians by our wonderful government, our allies. And we were just stooges for Stalin and the communists. And they always talk about, well, World War II was the war to make the world safe for democracy. No, it made it safe for communism. And
yes,
how they just bailed out, and that cripple old sorry rat Roosevelt and the drunken bum Churchill, they gave Stalin everything he wanted. They just turned over the lives of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people in Eastern Europe, just turned them over to the communists. But anyway, so but the problem with our war, well, the problem with all these wars, is the winners write the history books. So the winners are always, you know, saints and defeating evil and, you know, reading comics to the little kiddies and handing out candy bars. And, yeah, they handed out candy bars after they burned their home down and destroyed all their means to feed themselves. So we're going to start off, and I'll admit myself that I didn't know any better. When I was in the fifth grade, we had to memorize Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And I thought, well, that's just an assignment. I memorized it and spouted it off. I didn't really think it was right, but I didn't know enough facts to refute it. And I would love to give, and I think we did this one time on the show, give Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and go sentence by sentence, nope, this was a lie. Nope, this was a lie. Nope, this never happened. Nope, this was a lie. So anyway, to our listeners out there, you need to study historical facts, not just take the propaganda from the winning side. First-hand accounts from participants that were either fought in these wars or political leaders at the time, and you will find out that the wonderful U.S. of A. government has lied over and over and over again to every single generation. They lied to the generation that was alive in this war of 1861 to 65. They lied about the Plains Indian Wars and how they wanted them exterminated so they could take their land out west. The Spanish-American War, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, the one we were caught up in, Iraq and their weapons of mass destruction. And now we're supplying all the weapons and bombs and everything for Israel so they can wipe out the Palestinians and get rid of that little problem that they had right next door to them. So why not look at this as a huge lie in 1861? Now, first of all, some facts we're going to correct. I've gone to the Civil War Roundtable to speak in different organizations. I've been to the luncheon meeting for the Lions Club, and I get introduced as a Civil War historian, and that's not really correct. I've been introduced to or called some other things. I'd actually be rather called some of those less than courteous names than a Civil War historian.
Especially because, in Charlottesville.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. First of all, it wasn't a Civil War. That's the enemy's term. It's a short term. And by saying it was a Civil War, they're implying that the Confederacy, the Southern states, the legally set up Confederate States of America, were in revolt trying to overthrow the U.S. government. And nothing is further from the truth. If we go to Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, which I'm not really impressed with stuff in college or collegiate, but anyway, I think they got this one right. They say that a civil war is in one country. It's fought between factions within one country. Well, that's not true. The United States of America invaded the Confederate States of America. So it would just be like, you know, Mexico invading this country or the United States invading Mexico or whatever. The war with Mexico in the 1840s was not a civil war because the United States invaded Mexico. And we tried to invade Canada in the War of 1812 and take over Canada and make it part of the United States. And the Canadians said, no thanks, eh? And sent us scurrying back across the lake to the United States. So it was not a civil war in that definition. And then the second part of that definition that you'll find in your dictionary is it was a fight between two groups within one country for the control of the government of that country. And that's wrong on both counts. There was no desire, there was no objective, there was no effort by the Confederate States of America, their army, their navy, whatever, to take over the government of the United States. It was simply a war for independence. We'll get into some of the reasons for it, but we felt like that we were getting the short end of the stick and a real raw deal from the U.S. government. And we said, you know, enough is enough. If you're going to send crazy wackos down here to start slave uprising and have us killed, you're overtaxing us. All the money's going to projects, or they called it internal improvements back then. We called it pork barrel politics today. We're paying for it, and we're getting nothing in return for it. And now, with the election of Lincoln, we have a real nutcase party in power in Washington. And what we have to remember is, back in the 1860s and 70s, and probably up through the 1880s, the Republican Party was the nutcase party. They were not the conservative party that they claim to be today. So we'll get into a little more detail about this after we come back from the break.
Be right back, folks.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. With that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the morning. Smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue.
Whoa, good Blood River Radio family. Without wasting another minute, we're going right back to the professor himself, a.k.a. wears many hats, the bitter ender and the sword breaker. So go right back to you, bitter ender.
Thank you, Eddie. We were talking about how this conflict in this country, which was actually, even most liberal historians say, was the most violent conflict in the Western Hemisphere, the most horrific war ever fought on this side of the ocean. There were worse ones in Europe and Stalingrad and places like that. We could name quite a few, but for this hemisphere, it was the worst war fought here. That it really wasn't a civil war. There was no attempt by the South to take over the government of the North. And it was not fought between two factions within one country for control of the government. Now, if you have the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s, the communist against the Franco and the fascist, that was a civil war because whoever won that was going to take over the government of Spain. And Franco won, and their group took over and kicked the communists out of Spain. Same thing, the British Civil War. The Parliament, the Roundheads and the Cavaliers, and fight for the government of England. So that wasn't the case here. We had one section of the country that simply wanted to leave. And our enemies, since they won, they write the history books and they call it a civil war, which it wasn't. It was a war for Southern independence. It was a war to crush the independence movement in the South. And some people call it the war between the states. And that's better than the Civil War, but it's not really accurate because New York didn't fight against Alabama and Georgia didn't fight against Michigan. It was the government of the North that invaded the South and forced us to be a part of their country. So anyway, one of the other things that's always thrown out there, people say, well, secession was illegal. That you just can't decide to leave the United States. Well, no. These people need to read the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, which says
Declaration of Independence.
Well, yes, too. And, you know, the Constitution is supposed to be our rule book, and we play by that rule book.
Yes.
The 10th Amendment says the power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited to it by the states, which means the states give the government the power to the central government, nor prohibited to it, the U.S. government, by the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. And that pretty much says that since secession was not ruled out in the Constitution, it was legal. And if you really read the Constitution, which most of our legislators in Washington haven't done, the Constitution is a whole list of things that are prohibited to the central government. And you read how it's stated, the government shall not do this, cannot do that, will not do this. It doesn't list all the things that they can. There are very few things that the central government can do. Most of the things in the Constitution are prohibiting what the government cannot do. So, in fact, at West Point, secession was taught to be legal, that states could leave the Union up until 1861. And then they changed the textbook real quick when that was going on. And we've had secession. Nationalist China seceded from communist China and got out of the mainland and set up a government on Taiwan. And we think that's great. That's fine. They seceded from communist China. The Irish seceded from British rule, and they have an independent state of Ireland today. And all of our Irish descendants in this country, and most of us, think, well, that's great that Ireland got out from under the boot heel of the British. The British couldn't keep starving them and everything. Now, secession wasn't started in this country. It was started, the idea was, well, first of all, our country was started on secession. We seceded from the British Empire. And, you know, we celebrate July 4th as American Secession Day. Now, they call it Independence Day or 4th of July or, you know, whatever. But it's actually we're celebrating Secession Day, the secession from the British Empire. But they don't want us to bring that up today. And since I'm sort of a sore loser, since we in the South can't celebrate our independence, why do I want to celebrate theirs on July 4th? And I don't care about watching the fireworks. And if you watch it on TV, they're always playing in the background music there, the battle hymn of the repugnant and Yankee doo-doo. And I really don't want to listen to that. So I just kind of skip it and go on to July the 5th. But it was down through our history, New England, when they didn't like the way things were going, they were always ready to secede. They wanted to secede during the War of 1812. In fact, the Hartford Convention, they even passed an ordinance of secession and took it down to Washington, D.C. to present it to the government to get us out of the War of 1812 against the British, since it wasn't going as well as we had expected. And the only thing that didn't cause us to have total defeat by the British government and be brought back into the British Empire was the fact that Napoleon had come to power in Europe, and the British decided, and plus they had lost a battle at New Orleans. They were going to try to take over the city of New Orleans, and the battle down there south of New Orleans at Chalmette. Andrew Jackson and a lot of the Tennesseans were there to defeat the British army there. And so they didn't want to have to fight a war over here and fight against Napoleon at the same time, so they figured they better put all their effort against Napoleon, and we'll cut some kind of deal with the bloody Yanks over there on the other side of the ocean. And then New England wanted to secede again when Texas came into the country. And they were all upset and threatening secession because they said, no, Texas won't be one state. They'll divide Texas up, and it'll be two, three, or four states, which means not only will they get two senators from one state, if it's divided, they'll get four, and if they make three states out of it, they'll get six, and they will all be Southern conservative Democrats, and that will upset the balance of power in the government. And so they had to make a deal, a promise that Texas, the area that was later to become the state of Texas, not the Republic of Texas, but give up their republic situation and become a state, that they had to promise it would be only one state, a big one, but only one state. So they only got two senators, and that time only had one representative because there weren't that many people living there at that time. And here's the thing, though. When this argument about New England seceding because of Texas came along, Abraham Lincoln was a representative from Illinois, and he gave a speech in Congress all in support of New England pulling out of the country. And he said, any people, anywhere, at any time, have the right to throw off their existing form of government and form a new one which suits them better. This is a most sacred, most inalienable right. So that was his stance when he was a representative from Illinois. A few years later, when he was elected president, and I've always made this point, he changed. When the South wanted to secede, he invaded our country and killed over 280,000 Southerners in the military, and probably another 5,000 to 8,000 civilians. They don't know how many civilians were killed, and forced us at gunpoint to be a part of the United States. So I'm assuming that sometime between when he was a representative and saying secession was certainly legal and great, until the time he became president. My comment about that was he was listening to the Eagles, Hotel California, and you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. So I think that maybe that changed his opinion right there.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, it made sense to him. Now, the other thing they throw out against us all the time, they say, well, the South was evil. It seceded to maintain slavery. Well, that's wrong again. The South offered to end slavery before the 13th Amendment, before Lincoln's emancipation, before the first shot was fired in the war. They said, fine, you want to get rid of slavery? Compensate the slave owners for the investment they have, because you had to have money to own slaves. The example I always give is, if you go into a Mercedes dealership and say, how much is that one right there? And they give you the price, and you whip out a check and say, here's your check, I'll come back and pick it up this afternoon. Those are the type of people that could own slaves. You had to have that kind of money. And so the British, when they abolished slavery, they compensated their slave owners around the world in the British colonies for the investment that they had. And to just say, no, you've got to lose your manpower, you've got to lose your labor force on next Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock, that would devastate the South as an agricultural country. Of course, they didn't have at one time slavery was legal in all 13 colonies, and slavery was legal in all 13 states when the country was first founded. And the North phased it out because they saw it was better to hire immigrants to work as pretty much slave labor in these factories and coal mines and things like that, because you had no investment in them. And if one of your Irish workers or German or whoever it was, poor person, got injured in a factory accident, they just tell him, drag him out of here and charge him for mopping up the blood on the floor and go down to the dock and get us five or six more people that have just come in. So they had no investment in the labor that they were using in these sweatshops in the Northeast. And that was why they wanted to bring the South down and abolish slavery. And we'll get into that a little bit more after the break.
Can't wait to get back, Bitter Under. Right back, folks.
pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Jason Walker. Trump administration's nickname for a new detention center in Indiana sparking a little concern. Here's White House correspondent Greg Clugston.
The Department of Homeland Security announced a facility in the state of Indiana will house immigrants facing deportation. Officials are calling it the Speedway Slammer. The agency posted an image of an IndyCar-style race car emblazoned with the word ICE. Speedway, which hosts the Indianapolis 500, issued a statement saying the town was not involved. And IndyCar asked that its intellectual property not be used. But DHS officials said they won't stop promoting the nickname. Greg Clugston, The White House.
Weekend protest in Britain. Police have arrested more than 360 people in London as supporters of a banned Palestinian group flouted the law as part of their effort to force the government to reconsider the ban. Also at townhall.com, a solid no from Kyiv.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky dismissed the planned summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Zelensky stated that any peace deal excluding Kyiv would lead to dead solutions. Any decisions that are against us, any decisions that are without Ukraine, are at the same time decisions against peace. They will not achieve anything. In a recent statement posted to Telegram, Zelensky said Ukraine's territorial integrity, enshrined in the Constitution, must be non-negotiable. I'm Rika Ann Garcia.
Officers have now captured a man suspected in that shooting a week ago in a bar in Montana that left four people dead. Michael Paul Brown taken into custody late yesterday. Three people have been shot and killed in a home in Dallas. No arrests have been made. More on these stories, townhall.com.
If you have unfiled taxes or are in debt to the IRS, this is important news. Did you know the IRS has programs specifically designed to help people struggling with tax debt? Powerful tax assistance programs that can save you thousands if you qualify. No one knows these programs better than the experts at Optima Tax Relief, America's most trusted tax resolution firm. A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, their award-winning tax attorneys and licensed professionals have resolved over $1 billion of tax debt for their clients. One call to Optima can start the process, helping to put an end to your worries about wage garnishment, asset seizure, and other aggressive IRS actions. Find the best options to solve your tax problems. Call the experts at Optima Tax Relief today for a free consultation.
Call 800-965-1433. 800-965-1433. 800-965-1433.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Experience the untamed spirit of the American West with Range Magazine. Each issue is a visual journey featuring award-winning photography and compelling stories that capture the heart of ranching and rural life. Stay informed on the challenges and triumphs of those who live and work on the land. Subscribe today and receive quarterly editions delivered to your doorstep, and join a community that cherishes the enduring legacy of the Western frontier. Visit rangemagazine.com to subscribe.
Dear Blood River Radio family, without further ado, I'm just going to say that everything Gene says is true about us having illegal. We have the legal right, not only by the Declaration of Independence, but by the Holy Bible, by God's law, we can leave. But if you don't believe me, just get you a copy of the Declaration of Independence. Read it. It's for you. Read it for yourself in the second paragraph. Anyway, go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Well, you know, they always throw that against the South, that the South is evil because it decided to fight a war to maintain slavery, which nothing could be further from the truth. They had offered to get rid of slavery, and like the British did, pay the slave owners for their investment. And the fact is, and they don't want to tell you this, there were more abolition and manumission societies in the South than there were in the North. And a manumission society, abolitionists want slaves freed at 8 o'clock Monday morning, and then they're on their own. You know, they're free, but they don't have any job skills, can't read, can't write. But that's not their problem. They did the good thing, and they're pulling their shoulder out of joint, patting themselves on the back.
Man,
but a manumission society teaches people life skills. How to be decent citizens and obey the laws, how to be literate, and does that, then they would get their freedom after that. So there were more of those societies in the South than there were in the North. The Northerners they talked about ending slavery, but they did not want the blacks in the North. You know, they talked a good game, but we don't want to be around the Negroes. And so they had black codes, Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio, and other states in the North, that a black, even a free black, could not stay in that state more than just overnight. The next day you had to be gone or out of there, or you were going to jail. And so they did not want the blacks up there. That was a Southern problem, and they needed to figure out what to do with them. And then Lincoln himself campaigned saying that he wanted to abolish slavery, but he wanted to abolish slavery so they could round up the blacks and ship them back to Africa or to some island in the Caribbean. And even it got down to the last few months of the war, and he asked Gideon Welles, who was the Secretary of the Navy in the United States, since the war looks like it's winding down, how many ships do we have available that we could get all these blacks from these contraband camps that have come following the federal armies around through the South, and they had to set up camps for all these blacks who were just milling across the countryside and stealing, you know, whatever they could do. So the North didn't want to fool with them. They sure didn't want them taken up North, because that would be competition for labor jobs in these factories and coal mines and things like that. So he asked Gideon Welles, said, now the war seems like it's winding down. Do we have enough ships that we can ship them all back to Africa? And said, sir, the war's still going on, and if we doubled or tripled the size of the Federal Navy, we wouldn't have enough ships to get all of these people out of here. So anyway, that was Lincoln's idea about blacks, and Lincoln flat out came and said in public speeches and so forth that blacks were an inferior race. And so he used them strictly as a political tool. So anyway,
I got an idea. They could get that Metro Mason Society to teach them to swim.
There you go.
We're the Nindo ships.
that they always throw at us is that slavery caused the glorious Union Civil War that they won. Well, that's wrong. This war was caused by the same thing that every war has been caused by since back in the caveman days. It was money. And because when the seven Southern states seceded and left the Union, that took the income away from the United States. And I've read different articles or different historians that say that the U.S. budget in 1860 was anywhere from $102 to $106 million. Now, we laugh at that today. They waste that much money just at lunchtime in Washington today. That's a drop in the bucket to the trillions that we're in debt. But in 1860, that was a lot of money. But say it was $102 million U.S. Budget for a year. The South was paying $82 million into that 102. The reason being because of the high tariffs, and where have we heard about tariffs before recently? The high tariffs on imported goods, because the South was an agricultural country, and they didn't have the large-scale manufacturing like they did in the war in the North, so they would sell their agricultural products, primarily cotton, to England, France, Portugal, whoever, and then it would import whatever manufactured goods they needed. Well, the North didn't want that because that was hurting their business. And just like Mr. Trump is saying today, we need American businesses. Well, that's what they were doing then. They were passing high tariffs on imported goods to protect Northern industry. And the South was primarily an agricultural country. They needed to sell not only to the North, but sell their products like cotton and tobacco and sugar cane and indigo and all the things that were produced here as agricultural products to countries all over the world. North didn't want that. They wanted, it was protectionism for manufacturers. And right before the war, they passed what was called the Morrill Tariff. It was a 40% tariff against the South and their agricultural region. And so far, this, you know, the Lincoln and the Republicans crammed this thing through. And after the seven Southern states voted to leave the Union, Lincoln's quote was, "What will happen to my taxes or tariffs?" And he saw the federal government going bankrupt. In fact, there was a panic on Wall Street that there wasn't going to be enough money coming in to the United States government to maintain the U.S. government. And there was a run on the banks and a real panic on Wall Street. So Lincoln also said, after he found out that they were going to lose a lot of money on this, he tried to cut a deal with these seven states that voted to secede. He said they can stay out of the Union, which is what they wanted to do. They can keep their slaves, which was not the major issue, but he thought it was, and they've tried to paint that today as all the Southerners just walk around beating the darkies all day long, and somebody else had to go out and pick the cotton. He said they could stay out of the Union, they could keep their slaves, if they would pay taxes to the United States. And that makes no sense at all. Why would we pay taxes to a foreign country? So in trying to, Lincoln was trying to do everything he could to provoke a war. And he actually said that he needed a war, and he needed to goad the South into firing the first shot. So there were two points of contention. They had ordered the federal troops in the harbor at Charleston, South Carolina, to move from Fort Moultrie, which is over on the north side of the harbor, out to Fort Sumter, which would actually block the entrance to Charleston. And the Fort Sumter wasn't finished. There weren't any soldiers out there. There was a construction crew and a lighthouse keeper, so somebody didn't run into it at night. But there weren't any soldiers until the Federals moved their troops from Fort Moultrie out to Fort Sumter. And they also occupied the fort in Pensacola Harbor to shut it down at Fort Pickens. But the main argument was over Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. And the Southerners had sent three peace commissioners to Washington to try to negotiate what were you going to do with these lands that were occupied by the federal government. And their argument was, and it was a fact, that these forts that were built in Mobile, on the harbors, Mobile, down south of New Orleans on the Mississippi River, Charleston, Savannah, Georgia, Fort Pulaski, the federal government did not own the land. They owned the fort, and they owned the cannons and armament and uniforms and everything in the fort, but they didn't own the land. That land still belonged to South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Louisiana. And so the federal government was actually just renting that land. So Lincoln, though, would not meet with these three peace commissioners, and I've forgotten the names. I know one was from Georgia, one South Carolina, one Louisiana. He wouldn't meet with them. He said the Confederate States of America is not a legal country. It was just a band of rebels in an uprising. And so he wanted to stall as long as he could. He wouldn't meet with them, so he turned them over to Secretary of State Seward. And Seward lied up one side and down the other and said, oh, the president will meet you with you next week. He's busy right now, but come back on Monday and he'll meet with you. Come back on Monday. Well, something else has come up, and the president wanted me to talk to you and see if we couldn't get something worked out, but we can't do anything right now. And this stalling was going on and on and on. The reason being, they were putting a fleet together in New York with U.S. Navy ships and civilian ships to actually invade South Carolina through the port of Charleston, South Carolina. And this is what Lincoln was hoping would start the war, that he needed to force the southern states back into the Union.
Well, Gene, I tell you, when we come back, we'll talk about another country we pay taxes to. Be right back, folks.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
A Venus is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dude, Blood River Radio family, this I cannot believe this time is going so fast, but we're going to go right back to the bitter end. I wish I could be privy to the conversations we have during the break sometimes, but there's just not enough time. Anyway, we'll go right back to you, bitter ender.
Okay, so we're at the situation where Lincoln said he needed a war and he needed to goad the South into firing the first shot. He would not talk to these peace commissioners in Washington, and they found out and that they were sending a fleet down to Charleston. Now, up until that time, Lincoln used the excuse, well, they won't let, they're starving. Our troops at Fort Sumter are starving. That was a lie. The federal troops were sending a boat up the harbor in Charleston to the market every single day to get the supplies they need and coming back out to Fort Sumter. They weren't trying to starve them out until they found out that this fleet was coming to provoke a war in Charleston, and they said, that's it. You're not coming into downtown Charleston anymore to the market, hoping that if they were actually starving, they would pull them out and there wouldn't be a conflict. But that wasn't what Lincoln wanted. So, yeah, the last 2 or 3 weeks, they weren't allowed to go into Charleston and get food. But up until then, they were going in there every day. So The fleet comes in there, and the Confederates in Charleston were sending people out to Fort Sumter and even asking them, and said, now, we know this fleet's coming. And Major Anderson was in command of the federal troops at Fort Sumter. He said, if we fire on the fleet, will you fire on us? And he said, yes, if the flag is fired on, then Fort Sumter will have to open fire on the artillery batteries around the harbor in Charleston. So that was the situation on April the 12th and what was going to happen there. So it did. And then, of course, that was the incident that Lincoln needed to call out the army to invade these seven states and force them back into the Union. And people have always said, well, Fort Sumter caused the Civil War, and all these other states, these six other states, including Arkansas, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, and later on Kentucky and Missouri, passed the Ordinance of Secession. So that's what caused these other six states to join the Confederacy, was firing on Fort Sumter. No, that's not it. It was Lincoln calling for an army, 75,000, to invade our sister states and force them back into the Union. So when Lincoln called for this army, then Virginia and North Carolina and Tennessee left, and Governor Isom G. Harris of Tennessee wrote a letter to Lincoln and flat said, Tennessee will not furnish one single man for coercion, but 50,000 if necessary to defend our rights and those of our fellow southern states. So it was Lincoln's call for this army to invade the South that caused the other states to leave the Union. So then we get the argument that the Confederate government was not a real government, but just a bunch of rebels trying to overthrow the government of the good old, wonderful United States. No, the representatives from the seven states met in Montgomery in February of 1861. They elected a president, a vice president. They drafted a constitution. We've talked about before, is very similar to the U.S. Constitution, except they corrected a lot of the things that they said, you know, this was a good idea on paper when it was passed, but it hadn't worked out well in the last 40-some-odd years. So they looked at the office of president and said, this clown uses the last 2 years in office running for the next four. So they fixed that. They gave the Confederate president a six-year term, but you can only be president once. So you better get it right the first time because you're not going to get a second chance. But they did give the president a byline veto. They had a balanced budget article in the Constitution, and the Confederate Constitution actually addressed the issue of slavery. They said it's not up to the federal government or the central government to decide. It's up to the states. And if states in the Confederacy want to abolish slavery, that's fine if the states want to do it. Or if new territories coming into the Confederate states want to permit slavery, they can. Or if they want to ban slavery as they come in as a non-slave state, that's fine as long as the state decides it. And they sent ambassadors to Europe and printed money and postage stamps. And if you can ever get any Confederate postage stamps, easier to buy stamps than it is to say it. They're worth a lot of money today, even more than actual Confederate money.
Wow.
And
she's got a quick question, Gene, if you don't
far
mind.
Far away.
Now, you know, a lot of, John Brown, you know, the bloody, you know, they talked about bloody Kansas. Was a lot of that bloodshed in Kansas during around the Lincoln's War?
Yep, that's what it was before the war. And John Brown and his bunch of fanatics out in Kansas were just killing people that had come from the South. And they were trying to make sure that Kansas was a non-slave state. They didn't want to compete with slave labor. And what they did on the Pottawatomie Creek, they went in and murdered a family, husband, wife, children, wiped them out because they thought they were going to be slave owners. And the family they killed had left the South because they didn't have the money to compete with these big plantations and all the slaves. So they wanted to go to a place where there wasn't any slavery, where they could compete on an equal basis with other farms out in Kansas. And Brown killed them because they had Southern accents. So the Secret Six of New Englanders put up the money to bring John Brown from Kansas, the murderer, the wacko crazy from Kansas, into Virginia and seize the federal army at armory at Harper's Ferry, arm the slaves, and start a slave revolt in the South. That was paid for by New Englanders. And that's what they were trying to do, was get a slave uprising going in the South. And they used John Brown to do it. And, of course, it failed. And when there was a black gentleman, Hayward Shepherd, that was a free black in Harper's Ferry, he wouldn't join Brown. So they shot and killed him right there on the street in Harper's Ferry. So the first casualty in Brown's slave uprising was a free black man that wouldn't join him. So anyway, that's the kind of idiotic nonsense that they had back then. So they're saying, I've also had this thrown at us, secession didn't work. So we can't even talk about secession today. Well, secession worked fine from February till April of 1861 until we went to war. And my argument has been this all along. If the good old U.S. of A. is such a great, wonderful country, why do they have to force people at gunpoint to be a part of it? Oh, well, that doesn't happen in this country. Well, it happened in 1861 to 65. We just asked to leave. We weren't going to overthrow the government. You could keep the government you had. You elected Lincoln. You got him. You keep him. We're out of here. And so we weren't trying to overthrow the government, but they couldn't. They wouldn't allow the South to leave because of the money that they were making off the South. So we were forced literally at gunpoint. Like I said, about 280,000 of our soldiers were killed. Probably they estimate another 5,000 to 10,000 civilians were murdered, not by collateral damage of an artillery round that fell short. They just went in and shot people and killed them. And so why is the U.S. of A. such a great country when they have to use force to make people be a part of it? That's always been a question I've thrown at them. And they say, well, no, that really didn't happen. I said, we're all one country now. And I said, well, go back to the Declaration of Independence. Governments derive their just powers from the consent of the government.
Yes.
But not in the U.S. of A. If you speak out against the government or try to leave the government, they will send the army and the military in to force you at gunpoint to be a part of the USA. If you speak out against the government and the corruption in the government out in front of the Capitol building on January 6th, they will arrest you. They will put you in a Soviet show trial that's an absolute farce, and they will throw you in their gulags for even speaking out against the government. And we're not talking about people that may have broken through the door or attack somebody, which was a very, very minor, a microscopic number of the million that were out there on the mall that day. But if you even speak out against the government, they go out and grab people just from videos and security cameras that had nothing to do with actually attacking the Capitol, but they were just there. So that shows you how low the government of the United States can sink with that disaster we had for 4 years in the White House.
Yes.
And what they've done to try to intimidate the people in this country. First of all, they lie to them about history, about the South and the South's attempt to not to overthrow the government, but just to leave. And they're always telling us, oh, well, if the South had left, you know, the country couldn't survive. We couldn't have the country we had today. We had to have all 50 states. Well, why? In 1861, they had 35 states. If 13 left, so the mighty, omnipotent, righteous U.S. of A., they couldn't survive with 22 states. So if it happened today, if those same states seceded, you'd have 37 states in the U.S. of A. And are you telling me that the Northeast can't support itself and California and the West Coast can't support itself? They have to have these Southerners that they always hate and make fun of, that we're inbred and we're just lazy and all this sort of stuff. But when we tried to leave, all of a sudden it was very important to have these people that they call lazy and inbred and shiftless. And they had to force them into the country.
So sure did.
There's no contradiction in the U.S. government today, of course.
You get that right. And if you don't think, even if you'd be a congressman or a senator, you could go against the grain, just ask Congressman James Trafficant. Oh, I'm sorry. No, he choked on chicken bone, and he's dead now because he spoke against the damn Jews. Gene, once again, brother, you filled it from the ceiling to the floor, from the wall to wall, brother, and you did a wonderful job. And I don't think anybody enjoyed it more than I did. And so I'm looking forward to
thank you, Eddie.
Yes, sir. God bless you, Gene. God bless you, Miss Lizzie. Yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you, Blood River Radio family, for tuning in. And good night, everybody. Same time, same place next week. God willing. Good night, everybody.